车间、流水线、机台、上岗证、加班、薪水。
Aún menos deberían suspirar o afligirse.
Me han entrenado para ser dócil, no sé gritar o rebelarme.
This is The Coward. First draft, reading notes, uninvited monologue, as you know. As I've said with other cowards, I'm trying to get my tongue back. I'm kind of in a silent place, and while I would rather stage these discussions with other people, I really just need to have talks with myself to keep my voice moving. So this is a space between the public and private, getting first readings down of books. Today I wanted to think about Iron Moon, an anthology of Chinese worker poetry edited by Qin Xiaoyu and translated by Eleanor Goodman. It was published in Buffalo by White Pine Press in 2016. And my experiences have always made me want to think about labor and labor poetry. I did heavy manual labor in high school. I was working at a plant farm, lifting, trees into pickup beds, loading mulch and manure. And then I did light industrial labor while in college. And when I graduated, clerical work in between. And after 20 years of working, sometimes as a teacher, I am back where I started in customer service. My last day in a customer service job is hopefully tomorrow. So I've done a lot of work, and I gravitate towards worker poetry because of that. And a lot of work that doesn't often appear in poetry. And I used to think that the politics of writing about work was kind of self-evident. I didn't think about it critically, and I think I was really naive. So while I've done this kind of work in the world, and you all are grinding away out there, you've probably done some of it too, and it's nothing that I'm saying is that special. I'm just starting to get my thoughts together in regard to labor discussion and to begin this discussion, and this anthology seemed like as good a place as any to start because I liked it so much. And of course, while I might think having experience as a laborer and one who through work has several herniated discs and chronic pain, I have real limits to my reading. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just a white American man who's lived in the relatively affluent Northeast, and so I've had shitty jobs and had trouble paying rent and heat, but I've still had a ton of privileges in this world, and so that will limit a lot of what I can provide. So let me tell you about this anthology. It's an anthology of Chinese migrant worker poetry, and it's arranged by the birth date of the poets from youngest to older. And these are mostly living poets, and poets living through economic liberalization. The first poet in the collection is Li Yongpu, born in 1965, and the last Zhu Liji in 1990. Zhu Liji being the worker poet known for his poem, I Swallowed an Iron Moon, and his suicide at a Foxconn factory, giving this genre its martyr and star. Putting Zhu Liji last also gives this collection a kind of tragic arc and resonance, I think. More than many anthologies I've read, this one feels as if it has that arc. The earlier poems tend to be more restrained, little lyric narrative snapshots. They remind me of Vietnam War poems written by American soldier poets in a weird way because they're so lean and reportorial, kind of like documents or testimony that take on what's right in front of them, the assembly line and construction site. One of the first lines that really stuck out to me was this guy just saying, I'm building a suicide guardrail at a factory. when there is sentiment in the early poems, it seems like it's often about yearning for a countryside from which the workers have been displaced or forced to leave by economic contingency and still have memories of, quote, someone is thinking of village roads, the foxtail has scattered its seeds in the middle of the roads. But there's this seemingly, like, really coherent, well, somewhat coherent aesthetic development. Later poems, as we move through time, as the poets get younger, are in a more synthesizing mood. Their lines are longer. They spill into surreal imagery and or systemic analysis. They're conscious more of history, the phases of history, and self-conscious about aesthetics. And they're often just like longer poems. Many of them fly, and I really admire them. And here I'm thinking most of Zheng Xiaoguang. My apologies for my mispronunciations. I'll spell it in case you want to look it up. First name Zheng, Z-H-E-N-G. Last name Xiaoguang. I probably got that wrong. X-I-A-O-Q-I-O-N-G. Though there aren't many female poets in the collection, Zheng, in my opinion, steals the show. And the editor of this, Qing Chao Yu, gives her a substantial portion of the pages. So good. Her 9-page in the hardware factory feels like an electrical storm to me. It's ambitious, dazzlingly complex piece of work. Here's just 2 lines from it. I open the value to life, this postmodern art. What do springtime's dark ghosts need? The iron is forged, its wet silhouette blooms in the iron webbing. A couple lines from Zheng's A Product Story. Gears, card edge connectors, pressure coolants, anti-rust oil, silent overtime. Fourth is certificate, standardized forms, exterior polishing, the lashings of a 3,000-degree furnace. The cooling heat treatment of overtime pay, of the raindrops of being fired, your twisted-up body appearing in an hourglass. Fifth is temporary residence permits, physical exams cards, proof of single status, migrant worker cards, work permits. From a poem language. Rust speckled switches, stations, laws, the system. I speak a black bloated fire language, a status, age, and disease, finance, a fearful howling language, tax collectors and petty officials. From Workshop Love. What's written in red is love, and the white paper shows your oily fingerprints and your body's warmth. Black film, bent shoots. The horsehead machine, like your shadow, moves slowly. Life's machine creaks and squeaks. These poems are, you know, they're capacious. Their attention to detail shows, I think, for me, the reader, how profoundly Zheng has experienced these spaces, and their arc shows them not alienating workers from life, but absorbing it, mixing into it, or not entirely alienating, or something that I don't think alienating fully captures as a word, but it doesn't allow them to separate. And there's no narrative of transcendence or progress in these poems, yet they're still humane and still about the mysteries of making. They say, I know this world. Let me show you its humanity and outrages that you who may have become numb to it, or which you have maybe just normalized this work by naming it and piling it. Let me show you, I see you. And maybe I shouldn't make too much of the differences between younger and older poets in this collection, because I think one of the remarkable aspects of it is there's this really consistent set of tropes the poems work with, and I'm getting this from the editor, Quan Xiao Yu, too. It's not an original observation. So the rural town of the past, iron moons, crushed fingers, workers suffering in silence, products as machine excrement. Many tropes are present that might connect this migrant poetry with that of migrant workers in the U.S., a close significance to identifying documents, papers, these fragile things, which their right to work in urban areas and be exploited depends. Poems constantly remind me of an educated me on the tears and zones of Chinese citizenship and what that meant about how one could experience and know one's own life. I think that some of the most interesting, most compelling moments to me mixed sort of terror and defiance, terror at the forces these workers are arrayed against, and yet action anyway. This is from the second half of Kneeling Workers Demanding Their Pay. Dazzling factory sign glints in the sun. They kneel at the factory entrance, holding a cardboard sign with the scrawled words, "Give us our hard-earned money." The four women kneel in the factory entrance without fear. A group of onlookers has surrounded them for several days. People from the same village, co-workers, friends, or those who work the same workstations. They watch the kneeling women impassively. They witness their four co-workers dragged off by the guards. They witness one of the workers' shoes falling off. They witness another worker's pants ripped in the struggle. They watch silently as the four workers are dragged somewhere far away. Their eyes hold no sorrow and no pleasure. They impassively enter the factory. It depresses me to no end. So maybe I shouldn't say there's fear or even terror in the poem. The poem projects that. It says there, no one here is afraid. But they look hard at power, power that the workers have to confront, the owners, their lines with police. Some of the best moments, there's some moments of incredible compressed and pithy defiance, is a poet called Alu, A-L-U, who has a poem called Purging the Landlords that begins with the line, "Today we won't go to work, we're purging the landlords." That's lines one and two. Line one, not going to work. Line two, instead, purging the landlords. Changpeng's abandoned village, moving bricks and sweating buckets. He demands his pay and goes to prison on a knife's edge. I also love the humor of some of these poems. Tao Tien Kai's poem Chit Chat begins with the line, "My third kid, what fuck up." For me, some pretty obvious chimes rang in my head reading these. Maybe too easy to compare them to Rukeyser's Book of the Dead. Same, similar images of environmental. The specter of silicosis is in some of these poems. Reznikov's testimony was in my mind too, just in the reportorialness of descriptions of industrial accidents, this sort of dread that surrounds this slowly, you know, progressing lines marching towards something really bad. More surprisingly, and maybe just really idiosyncratic for me, there were many, many poems about working in industrial print shops, something that I've done and my family's done. And that was really special to see this experience that no one else I know has had. Reconsidered, or somewhat similar experiences brought up, you know. I thought even my mother worked in my grandfather's print shop a little bit. I think everyone who reads books should know what it's like to make a book in an industrial setting. I thought of Karen Brodine's great woman sitting at the machine thinking too. Some lines, Chi Mo Shu in the print shop. Imagine the beauty of the movement. Up until my clothing was synced with ink and solvents, until my skin, my lungs. Sun Haitao, machine documentation. Someone will lift an old-fashioned German printer, which is on its last legs. It's from a time we endured together. Damn, I'd love love to put together a collection of print shop worker poems. I have to think really hard about its means of production. And just broadly, I was impressed with the quality of the poems throughout this anthology, having recently read some pretty shitty bummers of anthologies. Okay, I'm almost, I think we're at a halfway point. And these are just like my cursory notes. And as a document that maybe two, three people out there are going to listen to, some historical context might be useful for you for this. And then this is historical context I've been starting to build that is far from complete and I would like to continue to fill. But in regard to the situation from which this migrant worker poetry emerges in China and in the global market. The editor, Quinn Chao-Yu, has a really robust introduction here, which I think pairs the aesthetic and the historical in really important ways. But he describes migrant workers as longtime outsiders in their own country. This outsider status, he notes, was solidified by a number of governmental policies. 1984's Document 1. In 1956, Chinese government policies restricted the movement of rural residents, requiring workers to have proper documentation to be inside cities, among them proof of employment. So imagine the power that gives employers. In 1992, national policy also allowed police to basically deport folks from cities if they didn't have legal ID, fixed residence, and steady income. So it's legal to be unemployed, undocumented, or unhoused. Another strand of historical context that I could weave into this came from recent reading by Sylvia Federici. And I think that one way to see Chinese worker protests and protests within poems within the context of China's economic liberalization, which is meant, as it has elsewhere, persistent erosion of worker rights and benefits. I think Federici notes often obscured is the fact that the 1989 Tiananmen Square protests was driven both by student activists calling for social liberalization and workers protesting the effects of economic liberalization, those things together. Relationships between students and workers, this is just even more tangential, but it came across my screen recently. That relationship is still vital. And I think Reuters, a report chronicles how unionization drives at workplaces in China have resulted in arrests of labor activists and student supporters. And that students notably have been choosing careers as organizers over more stable career paths. It seems reasonable to read many of these poems within the context of this worker activism and economic liberalization. Zhang Xiaoquan writes about feeling left behind the supposed march of economic progress from a great poem in the Hardware Factory. So, in the words of one of these poets, diminished bodies feel the unformed future, and his designs depart from realism. The romantics start to feed on illusion. Our futures get better and better. Just keep on signing real contracts with blind men. He imagines plums on the southern mountains. He tells us that the eggs in his hands are rocks. Time seems set apart from the four modernizations of the 80s. I still haven't made it to the 21st century's low slope of prosperity. The mountains are so high, but the body rots, and how many years will it take to reach utopia? I pity myself as I age, unable to squeeze on the communism's last train, but living in a scorched wet workshop in a sweatshop like an autumn cicada, ready to cast off its shell, unnameable, unsummonable, impassable, trustworthy time, ideal sunlight, an obscure, silent future. Beside the new century is a pile of machine-cut trash and social stages. that came too late to complete. Time begins to defect. It laughs at our memories and enthusiasm as they slip away, and they don't stop your praises. Nothing can absorb more than empty time. There's not much. It's an intense relationship and consideration of time there, it seems like, and not a lot of faith and current narratives that work will result in anything other than itself, accumulation, savings, progress. Get the portrait of workers feeling left behind, economic liberalization. And of course, there's so much more than that reductive statement in the poems. And there's also this idea of like aesthetic teleologies and movements sort of trailing off. And my point is not to try to get anyone to be complacent by focusing on labor struggle in China in regard to how good workers have it over here by pointing out how bad it is over there. After all, things are not great here. There have been numerous reports of how, you know, particularly if you're an undocumented migrant worker, so many reports of how ICE has targeted immigrant labor activists and worked in COINTELPRO-ish ways to disrupt those organizations, which, one, fuck that, and two, goes well beyond their already fucked up, immoral, and illegal mandates. In America, we've got an agricultural caste system which, with violently policed borders of race and citizenship, in which many undocumented agricultural laborers work hard in miserable conditions. Reading Iron Moon, I think I'm made conscious of how important, within the context of Chinese workers, how important the rural-urban divide is, how class and even full rights of citizenship become defined by geography and state programs that formalize these divisions and establish hierarchies of rights between citizens in the states, and also just produce some subjects that are more exploitable than others because their rights are so much thinner. When I was reading this, I was also mindful of the fact that when people say poetry about flat factory floors is nostalgic, probably Phil Levine's thought, thanks Phil Levine, these poems remind us that, industrial production has not ceased. Just like, there's a recent book, it's called Microchips for Millions, which is about, I forget the author's name, but she talked about her mother's, and she was Filipino-American, talking about her Filipino mother working in the microchip factories in Silicon Valley, which were extremely toxic. But anyway, industrial production has not ceased. It's just moved from the heart of American cities, and in the case of electronics, Silicon Valley, where I think invaders were breaking the shit out of labor laws anyways, and it's moved to other countries or to rural corners of America with more heavily boxed-in workforces. And that's it. You know, like capitalism, technological progress doesn't eliminate problems like work pollution. It just displaces them. Companies send production abroad, rearrange the supply chain. I mean, it's definitely true still that a lot of poetry and work is nostalgic, masculinist. I think of Phil Levine, maybe it's the Phil Levine syndrome about daddies and grampies doing burly work in auto factories. And I think that that's always a critique to be mindful of, that most Americans aren't doing heavy industrial labor. And that there's something really problematic about mythologizing a white male industrial workers, which overshadows other kinds of workers and the realities of their work and the value of their work. Being mindful of service work, reproductive, domestic work, feminized work, how people of color are made more super exploitable laborers. We should look to labor by these individuals. I mean, labor poetry by these individuals. And I think what's necessary about this collection is that through transnational supply chains, American consumers indeed have definite relationships with Chinese factory workers through all manner of devices, not the least of which are their electronics. And the rivers and hills and labor is compressed into this Shandong book of sorcery. Let our severed fingers make it to California to collapse in front of the boss's properties. Let them entwine them like ferocious ghosts, generation after generation. My enjoyment, I'm going to wrap up, but I think my enjoyment of this anthology made me consider what I found so disappointing about the ways in which American worker poetry has been anthologized. And part of that could be who's doing the anthologizing. And admittedly, this is from a small sample size, but when I was looking for worker poetry lately, a couple people pointed me to this anthology called For a Living, the Poetry of Work. And it's, as an anthology, it's so bad. It's just so very bad. It's mostly moody, lyrical narrative accounts of single workers. The world in them is so small. And struggles to get past dramas of individual alienation through and redemption of work in the quotidian. I mean, there are exceptions again, but there's no sense of that work also exists among relationships, and that there's a relationship between work and politics, work and collective struggles. Few of the poems even howl or rage or even just plumb the depths of shittiness of work. It's content to turn a poetic image in a poetic place and call it a day. I mean, maybe it's also the product of like 90s mainline aesthetics and just the prevailing neoliberalism in the Clinton era, where, you know, highly articulate critiques of neoliberalism hadn't emerged and not as many folks were feeling its effects at that point. I don't know. So, I want to end with a series of questions for this collection, because I still don't know so much, and then labor poetry in general. First, what was the original distribution networks for these poems? How were workers sharing this poetry with each other? I want to know if this collection is most of their first real meeting. You know, is this somebody bringing them together, or is this something that emerged from pre-existing relationships and solidarities? You know, and within literature or within workers organizing, is this poetry an undercurrent or an overcurrent? And in general, what is the relationship between this poetry and the Chinese labor movement? Two, the tropes the editor Xiao Yu identifies, the moon, the screw, the ID card, did they merge in parallel? You know, is this just what workers write about? Or in dialogue with each other? Also, three, I want to know so much more about Zheng Xiaoguang. How has the reception of her poetry changed it? Changed the conditions of these migrant worker poets? How has it changed the relationship with each other, the relationship to the state? What happens when this poetry becomes legible outside of its initial circulation networks? And I'm also fascinated by the sort of proto-martyrological literature surrounding Zhu Luzhi. When I Googled his poem, his final poem, what's it called again? I Swallowed an Iron Moon. I found performances of his poetry in Chinese and English on YouTube by Peitong Hu. Someone named Juan Andres Gutierrez had a really impassioned reading of them in Spanish. Someone named La Bandita had a song in homage to him. So, I just want to do a deep dive on this literature. How far has it expanded? It's interesting to see it disfigured, proliferate across national boundaries. I think that's really cool. All right. So the other questions this leads me to in regard to labor poetry in general is, how viable is the workplace / labor as a site of struggle? If so, on what scale? Site of political struggle. Is there hope for an intersectional transnational working class poetics, or in America, or America's intersectional working class poetics? Does it make more sense, or is it more viable to think on a smaller scale, the workplace, an industry, a municipality? It makes me wonder what might some of the many faces of a successful or vibrant intersectional labor poetry look like. I already have individual poems I love, but I still feel like I haven't read enough to say anything about it. What would this be about? What is its poetics? Would these poems even be strictly cited in the workplace or about work? Would they be about conditions that cut across workers, regardless of work, debt, hard health care decisions, landlords, etc.? I don't know. Does one define success, even? Is that even a worthwhile way to look at it? I think about circulation all the time. You know, does work or poetry matter if it's just read by a bunch of fuckers like me? Is it only successful if it's read by and commented on by, you know, other workers? I don't know. I'm also really interested in the question of the circulation of, you know, like what an intersectional working class literature might look like. I don't have much faith that poetry that travels through traditional channels, even if it's leftist in content, makes much of a difference, because those channels are usually kind of bougie, academic. So I'm always asking, I always wonder, what are the most important distribution channels through which powerful poetry of class politics runs, or has run, or might run? Should be thinking about micro or macro scales of circulation, nations, axes of migration. Should be thinking small workplaces, neighborhoods, infrastructure, bus routes. Should be thinking digital, physical. I remember somebody, this talk at a bookstore I work at about zines and civil rights movements among people of color in the 70s and 80s. And they were saying, you know, zines are coming back. And I, at that point, I kind of sensed that, but I didn't know why. You know, was it just sort of like being sick of being on screens? But one thing they said is that, you know, for a lot of people, being online is not a safe space anymore. And so to find expression and identification, you have to go to more limited, cheap publication formats like zines. Well, as my work with work poetry goes on, I've got a lot to learn, but I felt so happy I had the chance to read this anthology, and I would love to know what you think about it. Poke some holes in my reading. And maybe I'll see you back here at the Coward. It's not public, it's not private space. I struggle. I'm so lucky in my life, and I want to keep talking, because I find myself, my memory just leaking out. I found myself depressed. And I want to know you. I want to know what politics can